Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. Recently, I put out a short audio about the myth of German military superiority in World War II, wherein I pointed out that most of the German army didn't have trucks and was not even motorized. I went and checked up on this afterwards, and everything I said is absolutely correct. Accompanying this audio is a photo of the German army as you didn't see it. You were only shown tanks and aircraft, but 75 to 80% of the German army is, like in the accompanying picture, you see white men and you see their horses and you see their carts. That is how the German army moved. And it moved and it fought over huge distances. It's the greatest military force ever assembled. And part of the reason was that they didn't have the fuel, and this was the simplest, cheapest way to run their army. And the point was to try and get as many men into battle as possible in the cheapest way they could. And most of the German army functioned like this. They walked. The Spanish Blue Division, which volunteered to fight for Hitler against the Russians, the Spanish Blue Division marched on foot 900 kilometers in 30 days. That is 64% of the distance from Johannesburg to Cape Town. They walked it in 30 days. White men have undergone amazing hardships in Europe that are not appreciated by the rest of their race. And also, these men are not just functioning like this in summer. They're functioning in summer, in winter, through harsh winters that most of us would never even conceive of facing. I want to try and turn to the topic of the Western way of war in a nutshell, in the shortest way that I can. Those few of you who saw my lecture, 50 Years of Race War in Southern Africa, you will know how I described and showed you how the whites learned from each other, how the Rhodesians and South Africans learned from the Portuguese, how the Portuguese helped us, how we cooperated with them, how we took their ideas to the next level, and then how Rhodesia went on cross-border raids and started fighting big battles, as opposed to all the small itsy-bitsy things the Rhodesians were doing before, how the big battles were working, how the South African army later became the greatest force that we've ever seen in Southern Africa. The SADF was the Wehrmacht of Southern Africa, and South Africa alone stood up to the Soviet Union. South Africa alone, under apartheid, was the only Western nation to openly fight the Russians and fight an army commanded by a Russian general, and there were lots of Russian military officers. 11,000 Russians came to assist and command the blacks. The Cubans came, high-tech military weapons came, and the SADF fought this big army to a standstill and even tore up its armored forces. In the fights in Southern Africa, the whites who lived here began to learn the lessons of Europe, and that's what I want to focus on in this short audio. There is a much more complete audio that I've done. It's 1.5 hours long. It's much more detail. It's about white men, how white men can fight together in armies in this time and in the future, how white men can overthrow entire countries, how white men can take back every square inch of Europe, every square inch of America, and heck, maybe even Britain. Even the useless British might be able to get back their own country. And in there, I talk in a great amount of detail. Here, I just want to give you a quick summary. The Rhodesians never set out to fight big battles. The Rhodesians in particular did not have a big army and they never set out to fight big battles. However, lots of battles that they fought on a small scale eventually taught them the value of the big battle. And they started engaging in big battles and cross-border raids. The big battles worked so well that as time went by, Rhodesia did it more and more. South Africa was much more advanced, and the South African army was prepared for big battle fighting. And the way the soldiers were trained in the old SADF, they were already being trained for conventional warfare. The Rhodesian army did not intend to fight conventional warfare, yet the Rhodesian army began to find that conventional warfare, even with their limited resources and limited weaponry, that conventional warfare actually worked very well. And later, right at the end of the Rhodesian War, there was even a big battle that the Rhodesian army and the South African army fought together and smashed a very large black base in the south of Mozambique. It is the only time that the Rhodesian and South African armies fought together in a single battle, and they fought in some of the heaviest fighting of the Rhodesian War. Now let me explain to you the white way of war and the Europeans, because whites who live outside Europe do not understand the Europeans, do not appreciate the kinds of things that our brethren have done. We totally unappreciate the incredible intellectual and physical efforts of our brethren in Europe and what they've learned. And what the whites of Europe have learned are the greatest lessons in warfare. They are the gods of war. The Europeans are the gods of war. Nobody has done war like the Europeans. Nobody has experimented with it. Nobody has been forced into such a situation like they have. I'm not going to go into the divisions, why they were divided, why they ended up fighting each other, how Jews managed to make it maliciously worse to the detriment of the whites. All I'm going to say is that the Europeans have a long period of time where the whites have basically formed themselves into tribes, ethnic groups, and they've had to fight each other. There were things that they could not settle verbally. And in this world, there are many things that you cannot settle verbally. And you will find that all the most important things in life cannot, I repeat, cannot be decided by discussion. This is a liberal Jewish lie. You cannot settle the most important things in life with discussion. It is not possible. The enemy will never allow it. Those who are in power will always resist it, and they will resist it with deadly force, or they'll put your ass in jail, or they'll hang you, or they'll send somebody to kill you, or if you try to do it, they'll come and kill everybody who tries to do it. The most important things in life cannot be settled verbally. They cannot be settled through courts. These things cannot be settled because the enemy will resist it. Because when you are going after something substantial and meaningful, you will find that your enemy resists it at all costs by every means in the book. So the notion that you can settle things through love and negotiation and peace, this is garbage. This is not the way the world works. It's never worked this way, and it never will work this way. And if you want something important, you're going to have to learn to fight for it. You're either going to have to learn to fight for something you want, or you're going to have to learn to fight in defense of something you already have. But one way or the other, when it comes to really important stuff, you're going to have to learn to fight in defense of whatever it is that you want to keep, or you're going to have to learn to fight in order to get that which you want or need or is critical to you. The Europeans are the gods of war. Nobody has experimented with it as much as them. Nobody has the knowledge of warfare that they have. Nobody ever went through the pain and the suffering that they have. Their method of war is the supreme method of war, and it works everywhere. and it will work in Africa. And the race wars in Southern Africa against the communists showed us that this method works. And if we'd continued longer, we would have fought more and more and more like the Europeans. The only people from Europe who fought in Southern Africa were the Portuguese, and we should also thank the Portuguese for their massive contribution in being the front line of white resistance in Southern Africa. If it wasn't for the Portuguese, we would all have gone downhill much faster. It would have been much worse. The Portuguese bore the brunt of many hideous things that the rest of us were lucky enough to never have to live through and face. What is the white way of warfare? The first thing you must understand about white men in Europe is that white men have always had limited resources, and therefore they've had to apply their minds and bodies and to try and work out systems and methods of warfare that work. And they had to take everything they had, what little they had, and they had to try and find ways to use it to the maximum. Therefore, the Western way of war is based on lots of intense thinking, lots of experimentation, much practice. The Western way of war is the most efficient way of war. I repeat, it is the most efficient way of warfare. It is the quickest way to fight a war. It is the quickest way to get a result. It also produces the most decisive result. Now let me show you something from Africa quickly to show you that the blacks know nothing about warfare. You will find that the blacks in Africa, that their method of warfare, once they start fighting among each other, their method of warfare consists of little raids, murder. They maybe a group come and they murder somebody, little raids, quick surprise attack, kill a bunch of people. It's basically guerrilla warfare with some surprise attacks. And this kind of warfare, they kill a few people and then everybody hates each other. And then the other side hits back 6 months later. They kill some people. Then those who were hit back. You'll find that in Africa that the blacks can fight a war for 20 years with no outcome. That they'll fight each other for 20 years. It'll be ongoing bickering and murder and killing and raping and slaughter of civilians. And they'll fight for 20, 25 years. And they won't have an outcome. Neither side will have won. Both sides will still be there. Nobody's won, and they're still carrying on. If you left them alone for long enough, they'd probably fight for centuries. And they fight in this stupid way without getting to an outcome. That was the first thing that whites solved, is have a war and get to an outcome because life needs to continue. The people who started our form of warfare are the ancient Greeks. The ancient Greeks were farmers. They had disputes over land, and these farmers had to tend to their fields and animals. They did not have slaves. They had to do the work themselves. So these farmers had to then go and fight these battles, which were about territory, and they had to do it efficiently. So what you had was you had the farmer and his son and his buddies and their sons, and everybody gets together and they form an army. And they used to have armor and pikes and swords and shields, and they would each supply their own weapons. So this army, which is made up of these civilians who supply their own weapons, they then have to go and fight a battle. But because they need to feed their families, they need to feed themselves, they can't go and spend 6 months of the year fighting and wasting time. They've got to get to an outcome, and they've got to get to it soon. So the army gets together, they choose their commander, they get their tactics sorted out, etc., etc. They even go to the enemy and they agree where they're going to fight. They agree, okay, you see that field over there? That's the place where we're going to meet. We're going to fight it out, winner takes all. So they go and the army goes and it fights. And within a day, men have been killed, and the winner takes all. End of story. That is the way that the Western way of war began. Everything that followed thereafter built on this theme, and from this many other lessons were learned. Many things changed over time, and I'm not going to go into that. Then, after the fall of the Roman Empire was the greatest state ever created by whites. It lasted the longest. It also had the most dominant military. Every army in the world today is based on the Roman army. Every army is based on the lessons of the Roman army. That's why you have commanders. That's why there's only one commander. That's why there aren't two and three busy debating. Everything is decided by a single man in charge of something. A single man in charge of a company. A single man in charge of a battalion. A single man in charge of an army. This is the result of centuries of warfare. In fact, even thousands of years of warfare. Ultimately, you need a single person making decisions, not committees, not multiple people. You don't go and vote on the strategy. You have one man who makes the decision. I'm not going to go into the benefits, into how they arrived at it. They experimented with all the others. The other methods don't work. This is the best method. A single commander for everything. So whether you have an army of 1,000 men or an army of 1,000,000 men, you have one commander. End of story. That's how you do it. And that works the best. The European method is the most efficient method. The European method is also the fastest method. And the great thing that all European military commanders strive for and they seek is decisive victory. Decisive victory is the gold medal of warfare. Decisive victory as opposed to indecisive victory. These blacks who fight each other for 25 years is because the blacks lack strategy. They don't have the ability to win decisively. So they just carry on, and this one hates that one, and then that one says, let's go murder somebody on Tuesday. And then somebody else says 3 months later, listen, let's get 50 of us together. We've got to go kill that lot over there. And while we're busy, we're going to rape those women. That is the stupid black way of warfare. That's how the blacks wage war. That's not the white way. And it's a dumb way. And it's a way that results in no outcome. The white way of warfare results in outcomes. And the white way of warfare also results in outcomes even if you're outnumbered. All of the problems have been solved. Everything's been solved. It's been tried and tested. Millions of men have fought this way. It works. The critical and most important thing in the white way of war is you form an army. Your army also is not an army that sits with the army spread out over the entire country. Wrong. That's where you stop. Stop. Get off the bus. You don't have your army spread across the entire country. You don't do that. The first and most critical thing in your army is you gather your army together. The army must gather together and be physically linked to each other in one place. The most important thing in your country in time of warfare is your army. It's your army or nothing. So your army has to be kept safe. Your army has to be supplied. Your army has to be looked after. Your army has to be trained and organized to maximum efficiency. Then what you do with your army is your army goes and hunts for the enemy's biggest army. If the enemy has got multiple armies, you find the most important army and you go and you focus on them and you destroy them. If the enemy is stupid enough to have many armies split out across the place, you find them one by one, you start with the strongest and you destroy each one in turn. If the enemy has a single army, then your goal is to find that army and destroy that army. and tear it apart and render it dysfunctional. You do it through many methods. You can cut its supplies. You can corner it in some way. You can surround it. You can trick it. You can do all kinds of things. You can launch surprise attacks on it. You can do all sorts of things, but you render that army dysfunctional. Most men who go to war do not want to die. Armies will break up before you've killed large numbers of men. If you have an army that you're fighting against, it is very unlikely that the army will continue fighting beyond 10% deaths or 10% casualties. When I say casualties, that means one third of that total are people who are dead. The other two thirds of the total are people who are injured. So depending on how strong and tough and determined the enemy army is, they will only be able to suffer casualties up to a point before the men start running away. Men also, because they do not want to die, will run away before the battle. And if an army faces another army, and the army that they are facing is an army with a terrible reputation and a reputation for always winning, then the troops in the army that's facing them will already be feeling scared, and many of them may even run away the night before. I'm not saying huge numbers will run away, but I'm saying that if you have an army of, say, 50,000 men, you might find that 200 or 300 run away before the first shot of the battle has even been fought. The secret is army versus army, because the army is the strongest brute force mechanism that you've got. And if you can destroy the strongest brute force mechanism that the enemy has got, the rest of the enemy, regardless of how big their population is, the rest of the enemy is defenseless. I repeat, if you smash the biggest brute force mechanism that the enemy has, then the rest of the country is yours for the taking. You can do what you want with it. You can kill whoever you need to kill. You can destroy any pathetic resistance that anybody else might put up. Your goal is destroy the enemy army. You either destroy the enemy army, or if you are able to and you can catch them in a battle and you're really whipping their asses, many of them may even surrender to you. And that's a win-win, because when they surrender to you, you firstly take all their weapons and supplies, and secondly, you turn them into prisoners of war. They become your slaves. You're going to put them to work, and any who give you problems, you're going to kill them, and you're going to do what you want to do with them. So if an enemy army surrenders, you've got weapons, you've got supplies, and you've got slaves. So all win-win. Plus, you didn't have to fire your bullets. You didn't have to have your guys killed. So if you can corner them, scare the living hell out of them into surrendering, you've got a whole bunch of slaves that you can put to good work. You can make them do all the nasty stuff that you don't feel like doing. For those who actually do fight, that's where the army comes into play, and your army maneuvers and does many things in order to smash that army. You make it dysfunctional, you try and cut off its supplies, you try and scare it, you try and do all kinds of things, you make strange movements, and you try and catch them in traps. You also lay traps for your enemy. You try to entrap them, or you try to surprise them. You do all kinds of things to smash them. Once you've smashed them, everything else is yours. Then the country is yours for the taking. It doesn't matter if the population outnumbers you 100-1, the country is yours for the taking. You might not be able to control every inch of the country, but wherever your army goes, it can slaughter whoever it wants. Any fool who tries to put up resistance, you can do with them as you please. You now have carte blanche on the whole country, even though your troops do not occupy the entire country. Your troops might only occupy 5 or 10% of the country's actual surface area. but you are the strongest force. And any force that arises, you just see to it that you move there and you destroy that force. So the reason that you fight big battles is because in the big battle, you are going after the biggest thing the enemy has, and you want to destroy it decisively as fast as possible. You therefore have to apply maximum force to break the enemy. You have to find the weaknesses and break them as fast as you possibly can. You are also trying to overwhelm your enemy. When you are fighting a battle, it doesn't help if 90% of your men are sitting in the rear and they're busy smoking and eating and not doing anything. You want everybody in battle. And the key thing is to have as many men in battle at the most critical place in the battle at the time that is needed. And if there should be another battle that forms, you move as many men as possible, as fast as possible, to that critical point. The whole purpose of it is you've got to find the enemy and smash any resistance as fast as possible. Speed in battle is also important. It's critically important. If you can move fast, catch the enemy off guard, catch them when they're not expecting it, hit them in places they're not expecting, outnumber them, come in with a plan, execute it fast. These are all the basic elements of warfare the Western way. And all these principles work. In Southern Africa, we have come to believe that guerrilla warfare is the superior form of warfare. That's not true. Guerrilla warfare is the weak man's way of war, and the guerrillas have to hide behind the civilians. However, the way in which we fight it in the Christian style of fighting, the Christian moral impossible style of fighting, where you fight in a way that makes it impossible for you to win, you therefore do not go and just kill people. You go and you hunt high and low for that particular guerrilla. This is stupid. If you can't find the people who came out of the masses and attacked you, what you do is you go back to the masses and you kill them. You take those masses, you slaughter the whole lot. Why? Because you can. Because you've got the military force. They don't have the military force. The guerrilla is weak. He has to hit you with a surprise attack, then he's got to run away. If he hits you and he runs away and you can't find him, what you do is you round up a whole bunch of the civilians, you slaughter the whole lot, and you say to them, listen, we are killing all of these people, and this is payback because you killed some of our people. So let's say the guerrillas come and they kill 10 of our people. Then what we do is we say, okay, you killed 10 of our people. What we're going to do is we're going to come, we're going to kill 1,000 of your people. And we don't care who it is. We're going to kill your men, your women, your children, your old people, your young people. We'll kill whoever's there. There's 1,000 people. Let's round them up. We kill a whole lot of them. And now they're gone. And you say to them, for every person on our side that you kill, we're going to kill 100 of yours. So you just carry on doing this as many times as you want. We will respond in the same way until you get tired of it. Problem solved. That's how you win guerrilla war. Once you've smashed the enemy army, you can do what you want. You can then start splitting your army up and say, okay, you go over there, you take that city, you take that city, you take that town, you defend this, you defend that. One of the most brilliant ways in which an army was used like this is by King Frederick the Great of Prussia. King Frederick the Great of Prussia in the Seven Years' War faced armies from massive countries that totally outclassed him. But he was a very brilliant king, and Frederick the Great had a maxim. Frederick the Great said, if you defend everything, you defend nothing. And he was completely correct. In 7 years of warfare, he fought 16 pitched battles. He only won half of his battles, but he survived the war. Eventually, one of his enemies got tired and gave up, and then everybody else gave up. And he won simply because he didn't stop fighting, and they could never destroy his army completely. He was able to take his army, and even when his army was defeated, he was still in such a position that he knew he had to keep his army together. So he basically left large parts of his country lightly defended or even undefended at all, and threw everything into his army. It was so bad that at more than one time, his capital city, Berlin, his capital city was attacked by an enemy army, smashed and torn up on more than one occasion. But he didn't care, because the most important thing that he had to keep alive was his army. And his army had to function as a group, and it had to descend on the enemy, and it had to fight pitched battles and defeat enemy armies. And as long as his army remained intact, it didn't matter what the enemy did to the rest of the country. They burned down parts of the country. They did all kinds of hideous things. As long as he kept his army intact, he was not yet defeated. And he moved his army around depending on his enemies. Even when he was defeated, he scared his enemies to such a degree that they would not attack him again, even after he'd been defeated. Even after he'd lost a battle, he would actually do other strange things that would scare his enemies, and they would actually leave his army alone. He used his army as a terror machine. It was his iron fist, and it scared everybody. And it didn't matter what the other armies did in the rest of his country. He made sure that his army remained intact at all times. Napoleon understood this principle. Napoleon took these principles even further, and he also functioned exactly the same way. Napoleon's goal was find the enemy army, tear it apart. Once you've torn the enemy army apart, the rest of the country is at your mercy. That is how it works. And it is on rare occasions that the people engage in guerrilla warfare. He only struggled in Spain, and he only struggled in Russia. But the true answer to that is to return to the Roman way, which is if people start turning on you, you go and you grab them, you slaughter them, or you sell them into slavery, or you do something with them. But you basically take the civilians and you make an example of them. And you can keep on killing civilians because the civilians are unable to defend themselves against a proper military force. So you just keep on killing civilians as many times as you need to until eventually everybody loses the will to resist you. When you smash armies, when you kill people, you start spreading terror. And terror moves and works very well. People do not want to die. Even the blacks do not want to die. Terror is a big factor. And in European history, kings made good use of terror. You scare people to such a degree that they don't want to fight you. That is very important. Your key is not to get weak, pathetic cooperation through endless negotiation and ass-kissing. Your goal is to scare the living bejeebers out of anybody who is thinking of being an enemy of you. And you will find that if you smash an enemy army and you move into an enemy city, you may find that a vast majority of the people even run forward and greet you and thank you for liberating them. Most of them might even be liars, but it doesn't matter. You now have people who will work for you, and you have people you can tax. And you've got spies. You've got all kinds of things that come out of it. With the European way of warfare, you don't concern yourself about people loving you. You scare them into cooperating with you. That's what you do. You scare the living hell out of them. And their choice is either cooperate with you or get killed. And this method works. It works like a charm. Furthermore, about defenses, I said that Frederick the Great left chunks of his country undefended. The fact of the matter is that setting up defenses slowing down other armies, these things are actually relatively easy. You go, you find bridges over big rivers or impassable terrain, you blow them up, you put a couple of troops there just to guard them, just so that the enemy can't like rebuild it. You can put a couple of guys here, a couple of guys there, and you'll be able to stop large enemy forces simply through either building some simple fortifications or blowing things up. You can build walls, you can build defenses. They don't have to be fancy. The soil is a very effective defense mechanism, even in this day and age. If you dig a trench, the enemy can shoot artillery at you till they're blue in the face. They're not going to kill many people. They can fire artillery day and night. If you've got nice deep trenches, you can live for very long. If you take soil and you make earthen walls, you can build big defenses. In the days of the Roman Empire, the Romans at times built earthen walls 20 kilometers and longer, and they did it using spades. With a couple of bulldozers, you can easily make an earthen wall. I assure you, the enemy can fire shells into those things till they're blue in the face. You just put a couple of guys behind it. You're going to keep a lot of enemy troops busy. The way that you can do defense is you take small numbers of your men and you put them in critical places. You put up some simple defenses. You'll keep large amounts of the enemy busy while 95% of the rest of your army focuses on the task of find the enemy, tear them apart. And speed and all those things are critical. Once you start breaking them and they start running, their structures break apart. You hunt down the survivors. You ruthlessly hunt down the troops that ran away. You hunt them down and you either get them to surrender or you kill them outright. That's what you do. You wipe them out. You seize their stuff. You get their stuff. Now it's yours. That's how you handle these people. Suppose now your enemy's got a really big army and they've broken their army into four parts. And each of those parts is as big or even slightly bigger than your army. What you then do is you take your army, you find one of those four armies, and you find the one that you can inflict the most damage on, and you get in there and you maul them and you rip them apart at the soonest. As soon as you've torn them apart, you then start hunting for the next one. The fact that you've torn one of their big formations apart will be a big demoralizing factor for the enemy. Large numbers of them will be shocked by it. And the sooner you can attack the next one while they're still in a state of shock, the better. Speed is important. The faster you move, the more you save your own soldiers' lives. The more you move and the harder you hit them at the point where you hit them, the more damage you will inflict on them and the more lives of your own soldiers you will save. The results are exponential. If you hit an enemy and you've got twice the military power. I'm not saying twice the numbers. I'm just going to use a vague term and I'm going to call it military power. Because you can be as strong as the enemy even if the enemy outnumbers you 5-1. You could still match them easily. So let's call it military power. If your force has got twice the military power of the enemy, you will inflict twice the damage on them in half the time. You consequently will lose half of the troops you would have lost. The whole thing is exponential. The more force you use, the more brute force you use at a certain point, the better it works. The absolute worst concept in military history, the worst concept of modern times, is the use of minimum force. This is the dumbest thing. It's the worst idea. It's the most hideous idea. It's terrible. It's wrong. You should never consider it. The whole purpose is maximum force. When you go after an enemy, you use the maximum force to rip the enemy army apart. Use the maximum force, you tear them to pieces. And you try to see to it that every piece is ripped to shreds, that there's nobody who's going to resist. If they run away and they gather a new force together, you immediately attack that force and tear it apart. You do this till there's nobody left. That is how you do it. You've got to be aggressive and you go for the big things and you rip the big things apart. The enemy will be demoralized, they'll be scared, and once you start winning, your first battle is going to be your hardest one to win. When you hit them with the second one, you'll already have a reputation as a possible winner. By the time you've won three or four battles, the enemy troops will be saying, oh God, we're going to lose. They're going to say, we're going to lose before you've even attacked them. You are going to destroy their morale. They're going to start running away. The idiots who try to use guerrilla warfare against you, you simply go and you slaughter them. You make an example of them. You just keep on killing wherever you need to kill. If you catch the guerrillas, you should maybe grip them and maybe torture them to death in public, in a public place where everybody can see. Torture them to death. Live stream it on the internet for the entire nation to see. Make sure that everybody gets it live on their cell phone at the same time so nobody can miss it. That's the way to really scare people. And you use terror as your mechanism. Terror works extremely well. It's proven throughout history. Terror is the answer. The way to deal with guerrilla warfare is the following. If you cannot catch the guerrillas and torture them and punish them in a way that everybody knows, then you do a few other things. The first thing is you slaughter civilians in the area. So let's say the guerrillas came and they killed 10 of your people. Then all that you do is you say to the civilians, listen, this attack came in this area, but you did not warn us. So because you did not warn us, we are going to kill a whole bunch of you. So you go and you kill a whole bunch. Then you say to them, okay, in the future, if ever there is any kind of attack on us, then we will slaughter all the civilians in that area. So what you do is you put the onus on the civilians to run to you to come and tell you when an attack is going to happen. There may be many of them who will run to you with false alarms, etc. But the reason they will run to you is either because they're expecting a reward from you, or at the very least, because they don't want you to kill them. So even without offering a reward, you can simply say to them, listen, if you come and you tell us, then we won't kill you. So you just make it that simple. You don't offer rewards. You don't give incentives, blah, blah, blah. You don't worry. You don't waste your time with rubbish. You simply say to them, if nobody warns us, then we're going to kill people. And when we do kill people, the only people we're not going to kill are those who came to warn us. Something simple like that. Problem solved. Then you will quickly find civilians running to you with stories every now and then warning you of possible attacks. And you may have to go and investigate which are real. Maybe 1 in 1,000 are actually real, in which case you can give the civilian a little reward, etc. Use them as a future spy. But other than that, you just simply tell them, every time you kill one of our people, we're going to come and kill at least 100 of yours, or however many suits us today. We don't have to tell you. You've got to make things unpredictable and uncertain and scary. And then you're going to have a very easy time. Then you will find only a handful of the real hard cases who are willing to die. Only handfuls of them will dare to try it. And their numbers will diminish. And you just find wherever they are getting support. If you find that this particular area is problematic, these people are supporting a lot of guerrillas, then you go there and you make life hell for them. You go and you do various things to inflict more deaths, more suffering, destroy their food supplies. You make their lives a living hell. Anybody who opposes you, you just make their lives a living hell. That's all you do. And because you've got military force and they don't have military force, their casualties will always be massive. Your casualties, if any, will be very light. You just go and you just trample on them, you just crush them down. Any resistance is met with total crushing force. You will see how quickly people will either pack their bags and flee the country. I assure you, in such a war, most of the people, huge numbers, are going to flee. They're going to flee. Before your army even sets foot in a city, huge numbers will be fleeing. They'll be killing each other trying to get out of the place. And those who stay will be as tame as little lambs. Fear is a very powerful mechanism. People can become scared very easily. And fear can spread like a plague. It can spread at the speed of light. And in this modern day and age with electronic communications, fear can spread at an unbelievable pace. Fear is much more powerful than bravery. Most people are scared. The vast majority of people are scared, and fear is what you work on, and you exploit it to the maximum. Your military force, your presence, must bring with it awe and fear. The Americans used to say shock and awe before they did the attack on Iran. They made much of, oh, shock and awe, in the stupid American modern way. Ridiculous rubbish. Real shock and awe doesn't require any kind of commentary. The terror is real. The people will be running. Men as well, including white men, can get very scared as well. Fear is a big thing. And fear is something that needs to be managed. And fear is something that needs to be controlled. But if your army is good and it functions and the men start getting confidence, then you'll see. Then fear will play less and less of a role, and you'll see more and more bravery and exceptionalism starting to come out of it. You'll see all kinds of incredible things. Once white men get going, they'll be amazing. They're going to be lions again. It's not negotiation, it's not love, it's not let's sit and talk at a table, and we sit and we talk for the next 50 years and reach no conclusion. Terror works in 3 seconds, saves you a lot of time, and you're going to have a lot more interest. When somebody knows that you can kill them in the next 5 seconds, I assure you that anything you say to them is going to have a whole lot of meaning to them. They will be very cooperative. The white way of war achieves a decisive outcome. It achieves it fast. It breaks everybody. And then you can do what you want with the rest of the country. The rest of the country is there for your taking. And like I say, you can split up your army, you can move them around, you can do what you want with them. And if a new threat arises, you just gather your army together again. You just concentrate them together in a place and you say, okay, we've got to go and smack that lot over there. That's how you do fighting the white Western way. That way works. It's the best way. All the problems are being solved. This is the only way. This is how our race has conquered most of the earth. And there you have it. It's that simple. It's been done in the past. It's been done with old technology. It'll be even easier in the future with new technology. Masses of white men can go and tear up countries if they want to. It's not difficult. Form an army. Take your country back. Problem solved. That's the white man's way of war. It works perfectly well. The problem is it hasn't been practiced properly since World War II. We need to practice this thing properly. And even before World War II, we've not really done this thing properly. But when you're dealing especially with interracial conflict, you can go for all-out terror because you're dealing with another race. You're not dealing with your own people. You wouldn't go and slaughter your own men, women, and children. In fact, if you were fighting your own race, which you shouldn't be doing to begin with, if you were fighting your own race, you would actually be grabbing the beautiful women and making them your wives, and you'd be grabbing their children and raising them as your own. That's what you'd be doing. But if you're fighting another race, you don't need any of that. So what you do is you just kill everybody that gets in your way. Anyone who's a nuisance, you kill them. And that's the end of that. Those who are willing to be your willing slaves, you can keep them. And if there are any who want to be troublesome, you kill them. And problem solved. The Spartans actually made an existence out of this for 800 years, and it worked perfectly well. In fact, the Spartans are quite funny because the Spartans were known for enslaving their enemies when they defeated them. And after they did this a bit, suddenly everybody wanted to be an ally of Sparta. So the Spartans had more allies than they could believe because of what they did to their enemies. So the Spartans actually, although they were armed to the teeth and always preparing for war, the truth is that they actually fought very few wars. Their reputation so terrorized people that everybody wanted to be their friend. And that's how the world really works. That's how it really works. Scare the living hell out of people. Make them know that you're going to come down on them like a sledgehammer to their forehead, and that you are absolutely ruthless, and you will find that they love you, that they want to be your friends, that they want to be your allies. You won't even have to make a phone call. They'll be running to your door with gold. Billionaires will be jetting in to come and offer you business deals. And how you deal with billionaires and other scum, we will one day discuss how Julius Caesar dealt with scum. Very easy. You can deal with any liar. It's not difficult. So that's it for today. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.